Hi everyone, welcome back to the HR Leaders Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Peter Miskovich, who's a global future of work leader and the executive managing director who leads JLL's future of work consulting practice. He's also the co-author of the book, The Workplace You Need Now, the best-selling business and operational book that helps companies navigate the future of work. During the episode, Peter shares how organizations are enabling their ecosystems to support mental, social, and physical health, how to bring your regenerative workplace to life, the emerging technologies that are converging and enabling more human-centric workplaces, and how ChatGPT and AI will change HR and the future of work. As always, before we jump into the video, make sure you hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell, and follow on your favorite podcast platform. With that being said, let's jump in. Peter, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
Very good. Great to be with you, Chris. Thank you for having me today.
Always looking sharp. I like the jacket.
Thank you. We try.
Do you kind of have to? You know, if you're predicting the future of work, do you kind of have to always be?
I think, you know, for what it's worth, presence and fashion and confidence and how we feel about the day and the work and whether it's virtual, in person, in real life, extended reality. I think it all matters. So, yes.
I'm only winding you up. Like, it's funny, when I used to work in the city, I my friends would always be like, oh, do you not really, like, you must hate wearing suits every day. And I'm like, no, I love it. I love the feel of a tailored suit, putting it on in the morning, kind of like my brain transforms into a different mode, if that makes any sense whatsoever. And I walk out the door and I'm like, all right, it's game time.
I agree. I think, you know, we're tactile beings.
Yeah.
And so fashion, environment, lighting, mm-hmm. air quality, confidence, wellness, all sort of come together, you know?
I agree. Yes. Definitely. Tell everyone a bit more about your role. You know, it's because, before you get to your role, tell everyone a bit more about yourself personally, sort of your journey to where we are, and then about your role, because it's very unique. And I'd love to sort of delve into that first before we jump into the topic.
Great. Well, I'm the global future work leader at JLL. JLL is a $18 billion real estate investment advisory services firm. And I began my career, my early career in management consulting at Accenture, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and came to JLL 15 years ago. And Chris, I've helped to transform 1.5 billion square feet of commercial and corporate real estate. And I was an early pioneer in hybrid work with clients such as AT&T, Accenture, IBM, Citigroup, PwC. So I've been on the hybrid workplace journey for over 20 years, early luminary pioneer in the field. We also wrote a book in 2021, The Workplace You Need Now, which we co-authored with our CEO and head of research. And I counsel our Fortune 50 clients on navigating the future of work. And I also counsel our CEO and executive leadership team. And I counsel CHROs and executive leaders across organizations as how to navigate the new world of work, the new world of the workforce, and the new, you know, evolving world of the workplace. I'm based in New York City.
Pretty cool job title and role. Be honest with me. Do you have an element of "I told you so"? You've been doing it for so long. I'm joking.
I try to avoid that. I will share with you. You know, I predicted, you know, hybrid work 20 years ago, an early pioneer in this field, and the pandemic was an interesting accelerant.
Yeah.
And so we're still on the journey. So I mean, I love what I do. And one reason why I love what I do is that it's evolving and it's challenging and I'm continuously learning. So yes, with a little humility, a bit of "I told you so." However, I think it's all still evolving.
Sure.
So we take a learning mindset each and every day, Chris.
Yeah. Well, given that you've been doing this for so long, how have you seen the workplace ecosystem evolve? I'd love to hear your perspective and insight. You've kind of seen the entire journey before most people even saw it coming.
Well, I'll go back. If we think about work over the last 70 to 100 years, work was designed around office and location. And then about 20, 25 years ago, with the advances of mobile technology, the laptop, certainly the advances in 2007 and 10 with the iPhone and iPad yeah. and the cloud. And then in the early 2010 to 2020 timeframe, the advances of the experiential workplace with many of our large tech clients, the evolution, you know, really began in the 1980s. And the pandemic was this amazing and horrific intervention, but it served as an accelerant, Chris, to promote hybrid work, new ways of working. It enabled technologies like the technology we're using today.
Yeah.
And so I've been pioneering with artificial intelligence, with extended reality, early versions of the metaverse, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And it's fascinating, again, to see that all of this now is converging in a pretty accelerated manner. So I'm continually amazed every day. One reason I love what I do is that I'm continuously learning. The challenges are many. And I think how we navigate this new world of work in terms of human performance, in terms of technology integration, in terms of health, well-being, and what we term the regenerative workplace are all, you know, are all on the table every day.
Yeah. Delve into a little bit more. The regenerative workplace, I think, is a fascinating area. Could you elaborate a bit more on that for everyone?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So I'll start with my own journey. 18 years ago, I woke up on a Friday morning and I had paralysis from my left arm to my left leg. And I thought I was suffering either a massive heart attack or stroke. And I was placed into intensive care for over 9 hours. And what I had experienced was a very intense and systemic cortisol and stress event. And that event changed my life in terms of rethinking. At the time, I was a partner at a big four consulting firm traveling, you know, 250,000 miles a year. I managed a team of 2,000 folks, multiple clients. And I'd really pushed myself beyond the brink of exhaustion. And I took a 6-month sabbatical. I was enrolled with the Integrative Wellness Program at Cornell Weill Presbyterian here in New York. And I began a journey on integrative wellness in terms of my own journey of human performance, balance, well-being. And so I've practiced meditation for now almost, you know, 18 years every morning, 30 minutes. I try to get my sleep, even with my travel schedule and, you know, 18-hour days. And the regenerative workplace is an area that we at JLL pioneered 3 or 4 years ago that's focused upon the balance of mental, social, and physical wellness. And so in this new age of accelerated, you know, workplace, technology, performance, always on, multiple devices, 2 million apps, the ability to be disciplined in terms of integrative wellness and well-being and the regenerative practices are actually more important today than ever. So it's another area that we're very passionate about and we're committed to as JLL, as a firm. And it's an area that the HR community, and I think all communities, should be focused upon. And whether you're 15 years old or 50 years old, the regenerative principles of mental health, social health, and physical health and wellness are just critically important. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to share more about, you know, what we're seeing in our clients. It's interesting enough, I have insurance clients, financial clients, tech clients. They now have chief wellness officers.
Yeah.
Who report to the CHRO or to even the CEO. Mm-hmm. And mental health in particular is a great focus today. And we see that continuing as part of, you know, leading practice regenerative workplace program for, you know, any, if you will, progressed and caring organization, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, firstly, thanks for sharing that. I think it's important that we share those stories. And many of the listeners know my own story and I've shared it, but I'll share it again for you. It's also one of the reasons why I started HR Leaders. I worked in a very high pressure sales environment. I kind of describe it as sort of like the Wolf of Wall Street type environment, literally, mm-hmm. quite literally, and over 10 years. And that resulted for me in anxiety attacks, panic attacks, many other mental health issues that came along the way. Burnout, exhaustion, you name it. But I kept going and going. You know, I'd have 2 months off where I couldn't even leave the house because I felt like I was having a heart attack. Then I would dive straight back in, and you know, 3 months later, I'm back off again. And also in an environment where you were told to man up and get on with it, so that also didn't help. But that resulted in me actually kind of sitting down and having a conversation with my wife, saying, you know, what do I want to do? Because this isn't worth it. No amount of money in the world is worth this, how I'm feeling. And that kind of led me to starting HR Leaders. It also led to us starting our Global Wellbeing Summit, which we run every year in January, where we bring together, you know, 5,000 executives, wellbeing leaders, to share what's working in organizations and having the opportunity to network, share, learn, and kind of, it's called Ripple. But mm-hmm. and the goal is really that ripple effect of wellbeing through sharing those stories like your own. So I just wanted to thank you for sharing that. It's very important.
Well, thank you, Chris. And, you know, one of the themes as part of our regenerative workplace, you know, narrative is health before wealth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all the wealth in the world.
Exactly.
And all the technology in the world and all of the accolades or recognition in the world, I mean, cannot replace good health and good mental health, good social health, and good physical health. So I'm thankful every day. And I think given your journey, I think it gives a greater authenticity in terms of our own work life integration and life work integration, and also how we relate to others, you know, in the world of work mm-hmm. and in life in general. You know, this issue that, you know, life and work are somehow, you know, interchangeable or exchangeable or different. They're really all part of the same ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's another fascinating awareness coming out of the pandemic that our health and our wellness and our mental health and our sense of balance, our sense of who we are, our sense of purpose, our sense of meaning, our sense of joy, our sense of gratitude, all of those things are so important. And I really appreciate, you know, your contributions, and really appreciate, you know, your sharing as well.
And we're seeing that in our candidates, aren't we, who are coming to organizations. Even I've had a few interviews recently, and they're asking me questions around well-being for the very first time. Mm-hmm. What is the why? What is the purpose? What does it mean for me? And they really want to be part of a culture of care, right? And they want to be led by managers that are leading with empathy.
Yes.
As well. And it's not something only a couple of years ago, you wouldn't even hear about those things as a skill of a leader, right? If you had a top 5, top 10 attributes and skills of a leader, maybe a couple of years ago, I guarantee you empathy wouldn't be in the list.
Well, Chris, I'll share with you a personal story. So in the Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago, there was an article titled "The Superpowers of Highly Sensitive People." And I was reading the article and I took the survey, and it's a 20 question survey, and I rate very high in terms of being a highly sensitive person. And one of the characteristics is strong empathy. And what's fascinating, per your earlier sharing and even my sharing, I think the world of work and the world of management was very much about performance and sort of toughing it out and persevering, and big believe in resilience. Resilience is an important characteristic. But this article in the Wall Street Journal highlights the superpowers of highly sensitive people because of the ability to have empathy, to rejuvenate, to understand others. And I have, you know, I have 9 godchildren. I don't have children. And my godchildren are Alpha and Gen Z primarily. And they are very empathetic and interested in this topic of how they relate to the world at large. And so I think the next generation of workforce and workers, and even if we have 5 or 6 generations of workers in the workforce, I think this this narrative around empathy and engagement and purpose.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
This will continue. And I think generationally, I think the millennials started it. Gen Z is definitely on this path. And I think the value, meaning, purpose of their lives and their working lives is a very high priority, as it should be.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a very interesting shift that has occurred in the last 3 to 4 years that's continuing. Perhaps I was an early pioneer. You were an early pioneer. There are those of us, you know, highly sensitive
people. We learned the hard way, though. I hope people don't have to learn the way we did.
I mean, I think so, but adversity, you know.
Adversity is good, but there's a limit. I think we went past the limit of where.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, in terms of being in organizations that support empathetic learning and adverse conditions where you're given enough nurturing and caring to bounce back through the adversity. And that's sort of, you know, this ability of having resilience. And I've had a lot of adversity. I was nearly killed in 2 plane crashes, as an example. I've seen a lot of death, destruction. I will say, you know, all the recessions, all of the great, you know, financial crisis, having navigated those, I think those adverse experiences has given me a sense of appreciation and a sense of resilience. And I think organizations that provide that supportive, connective, nurturing tissue, if that's the right word, those will be the successful organizations moving forward. And that includes hybrid work, that includes flexibility, that includes nurturing, that includes regenerative workplace, that includes, you know, having a strong sense of purpose, that includes the ESG, it includes, you know, mitigating the risk of climate change. So all of the, you know, DE&I, put it all together. I mean, I think it's a really interesting multidimensional approach that organizations now must consider if they're going to engage and have a highly performing, you know, workforce and be talent magnetic in attracting this next generation of talent.
It's going to be an interesting to see how we find the balance, right? And I used my example of my daughter at home. I was saying to my wife the other day, what got us where we were growing up poor, having a lot of adversity, you know, not even having food, you know, on the plate or electricity in the house. Those are really bad things, but it's what built the resilience in us, which I believe is why we are where we are today. Then I look at my daughter who has everything. And I worry, I'm like, how do I find that balance between her, you know, being able to face adversity, which builds that resilience, that strength of character, but at the same time, making sure we're empathetic and we're there to help nurture. Kind of that's the balance that I'm thinking is going to be. I don't know how to achieve that. If I'm being honest, what does that look like? And I feel like similar in the workplace. How do we do where we don't over? You know, I've even experienced it in my own business where mistakes have been made by the team, and I've actually been like, oh, that's nothing. But then realizing actually to that person who's never faced adversity before, that is actually a really big moment for them that I've downplayed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, every generation has its challenges and new challenges. And I will say for my godchildren and the younger folks that I mentor, Chris, if I think about the acceleration of change in terms of technology and managing just through the cultural adversity of social media, for one, and managing through climate change risk for another. So I actually think, Chris, I would counter you a bit. I think this next generation has actually bigger challenges
really?
That we have to help them face than we have had, or really? I certainly have had.
I can see the social media one, definitely. I can see, yeah, I didn't really think about it that way. It's true. It's a different circumstances, different set of challenges.
Mm. Exactly. And I do think, you know, the hopefully wiser and mature generational folks like ourselves, we've got to provide guidance. Mm-hmm. And this is another reason, you know, I'm a very strong believer in being engaged throughout our lives. I don't, for instance, believe in retirement. I don't believe that anyone should stop being curious and learning and contributing. And I believe that, you know, if you're going to live to 100, make all 100 years count.
Yeah.
And I think in particular with the challenges that we're facing as we look towards 2030 and beyond, you know, those contributions by everyone will be very critical and actually more important perhaps mm-hmm. in the next 10 years than in the past 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, just to see, you know, what are some of the things that you're seeing organizations that you work with do in terms of how they're sort of enabling their own ecosystems to support mental health, social, physical, et cetera. What are some of the things you're seeing?
Well, you know, I'll name an interesting one recently in terms of hybrid work in providing, you know, daycare and childcare on site, which sounds like not a big deal, but, you know, versus providing all sorts of other amenities. And, you know, cafeterias are great and food service is great and all of these amenities are fine. But what really matters to people? So whether it's daycare, whether it's counseling, whether it's the ability to have support groups within the organization, mental health and social and physical health assessment tools and interventions. And so I think organizations need to walk the talk. If you really say and you state in your narratives that your people are your most important asset, then you need to support that with interventions and investments that will make a difference to the people. And so employee sensing, understanding where people are, understanding the challenges that they may be having, allowing for sabbaticals, allowing for flexibility, allowing for mental health, social health, physical health, you know, interventions, and simple things like, you know, child care support or elder care support, or, you know, people with disabilities, giving them additional support that they may not have had in, you know, the historical workplace.
Yeah.
So all these things are not necessarily new, but it's interesting to see those organizations that step up and that provide the investments and the tools and, you know, the programmatic approach to make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because out of everything you could have said, you chose those examples. And I want to touch on that because they're very close to my where I am right now. For example, the biggest challenge that my wife and Natasha and I face is childcare. We both have full-time jobs. So my wife has to drive 1 hour every morning to drop my daughter to nursery, then drive to either the office or to work. That's already 2 hours of her day. And then she does that again in the evening. Yeah. And the stress of doing that. And then on Thursday and Friday, Robin stays home with us. So now my wife's having to manage her full-time job with a four-year-old running around causing chaos.
Right.
So if someone was to sit down and ask me and Natasha, what would be the most meaningful thing, or, you know, that we could, how can we help you? That would be the number one, to your point around if her office had somewhere on site, she could do that. That would be an absolute game changer for us, and the stress, and she can just focus really and be give her full energy to work. And then on the flip side of that, my co-founder Shane is his granddad passed away recently, but for the past couple of years, he's been one of the primary carers. And there was no support there, and that has been hugely stressful and emotionally draining, and everything you can even imagine. Of him both trying to run this business with me and be a great friend, a great boyfriend, and looking after his granddad and providing care. So those are just really two examples that I personally relate to so much, and I'm sure so many people listening and around the world can relate to.
I couldn't agree more, Chris. And I know I had my own father who had failing health for 2 years, and I actually moved from New York to the West Coast and worked flexibly to spend time with my dad before he passed. So I think, you know, childcare support, you know, lives today are like orchestrated ballets. And the ballet orchestration is synchronized with such specificity that allowing your wife to have an additional 30 minutes each day makes a huge difference to your life and your daughter's life and to your family life and to your wife, as an example. And so those organizations that can really sense, in particular, where Gen Z millennial folks are today and these pressures of childcare, elder care, mental wellness, I mean, the ability to listen and to listen deeply to our people and then to respond with interventions that are going to be the most impactful, that to me is leading practice. And that's why it's not formulaic. And for some organizations, you know, it may be daycare, elder care, and mental health and wellness. For other organizations, it might be, you know, walking meetings and meditation rooms and yoga and deep breathing. I mean, I think the menuization of HR services and provisioning in terms of workplace and workforce provisioning, it's an ecosystem and it's a wide-ranging menu. And it shouldn't be so formulaic as it has been historically. And this is sort of the new opportunity for leadership, management, HR to step up. Step up in the world of people experience, people enablement, people care, people nurturing, and to really help individuals and families sort of orchestrate their lives with a ballet that is functioning and highly functioning if possible.
Yeah.
So those are some things that we're seeing. And again, it depends upon the organization. You know, not every organization is able to do things, but it's interesting systemically to look at either technology resources or outsourced resources, or, you know, I have one client that has a 4-day work week. And so the 4 days are really considered 2 days in the office, 2 days at home. You have a single personal day to be with your family. That's been a highly successful program for that organization. And so I think the experimentation that we saw at the beginning of the pandemic will continue. And I think given, you know, in the US, unemployment is 3.6% now. I think the next generation of talent, people like yourselves, my Gen Z godchildren, will demand these interventions and these leading practices.
And you mentioned the menu, and I think there is a problem with having a big menu because you need to take that menu and then tailor it to each and every person, right? I had a guest on recently who was talking, used an analogy of a hotel. It's like, Chris, imagine if we had a hotel that was a one-size-fits-all hotel. it wouldn't work, right? Because some people want a luxury hotel. Some people want a hotel with a view on the beach. But we're just creating these organizations where it's kind of a one size fits all menu for everyone, and expecting that to work. It doesn't work. Right down to the individual team, really, has to be tailored. And then from there to the individual as well. Again, we're already doing it with our customers. So why are we not doing it with our employees? Okay.
Absolutely right.
We mentioned some of those benefits. We had a workshop recently where we spoke about benefits, employee well-being, compensation and benefits. And some of the leads were saying they've done some recent listening and analysis to say, actually, out of these 50 things we're offering our employees, 80% of utilization is on these 4 things. So why are we spending 20, 30 million on all of these things when this is really what people want? As well. So the employee listening piece is super important. And then creating that employee experience and tailoring it is a huge opportunity for us.
We would agree. And we are seeing, Chris, leading organizations take a customer-centric approach to their employees. And then the other layer to this is the ability to refresh the menu, modify the menu, so that it's human-centric and relevant over time.
It changes.
And so this is, pardon me?
Because it changes, right? People's circumstances change.
It will change. And so this is, you know, a new challenge, but I think here again, with the technology tools we have, with the ability to sense and engage with our workforce, all of this is very doable and presentable. And the organizations that get this right will be high performing, and they'll attract, you know, the talent that will want to stay, perform, be creative, be innovative. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, it's a self, you know, fulfilling, positive, prophetic feedback loop. You know, it builds on itself.
Yeah.
And those leaders, I think the real challenge right now is a generational shift between leadership. I think we see a lot of, chasms between what leadership and management may think people need and want or willing to invest, and what people, what the workforce really wants.
Yeah.
And I think that harmonization will continue, but it's been challenging. And the pandemic was a big wake-up call to this chasm between management leadership expectations and employee expectations.
Definitely. What would you see as some of the sort of emerging technologies that are enabling more human-centric workplaces?
Well, clearly, you know, having been on the AI journey, and I've lived through probably three AI winters as an example, and very close to Accenture, Microsoft, and Google, and, you know, the technology firms that are now orchestrating at scale these new artificial intelligent capabilities. I think the ambient intelligence that's coming to the workplace in terms of sensing, and these technologies that will be our co-pilot. So I will, and, you know, this morning I had to orchestrate a brief draft for a client on a pretty intense topic. And I went to ChatGPT and I had the draft created in 90 seconds. I modified it in about a minute and I sent it to the client as a first draft. And that's an example of the power of these new technologies in terms of giving us more efficiency and more time. And then I believe our next elevated version of these AI platforms will be empathic. And my AI co-pilot will understand me and where I am at this moment, will provide me feedback and guidance, and will be my co-worker and partner in work each day. And that sort of ambient, highly intelligent, highly nurturing, highly caring and supportive co-pilot partnership is coming probably by the end of this year.
Really?
And so, yes.
Wow.
And soon. That, yes. And then, you know, we also see extended reality, virtual reality, the ability that we'll be able to teleport and transport ourselves into very interesting and intimate conversations and innovation capabilities, again, coming in the next 2 to 3 years. Extended reality, the metaverse, you know, we're going into a metaverse winter now. We'll probably come out of it in 2025, 26.
Is that because of the recent impact in the tech industry? Is that why?
Yes, and that there's more investments required. There's 10 layers of investment required for metaverse articulation and proficiency. And so extended reality, Apple will be coming out with Apple Reality Pro most likely later this year. I mean, you know, I remember when the iPhone 1 came out, Chris, and, you know, I had had versions of that 7 years prior with various technology firms, and it was this breakthrough technology in 2007 and the iPad in 2010. We're going to see similar breakthroughs with highly intimate and powerful workplace and workforce enablement technologies in the next 2 to 3 years. And it's going to completely change how we work, including this interface that we're on today.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll look back at this 5 years
from now. Oh, that's so outdated.
And think, you know, we'll be teleporting to, you know, a three-dimensional, you know, digital environment together and have a level of intimate conversation that will be as good, if not better, than IRL in real life conversations.
Yeah.
And so all of this, you know, will need to be managed and governed, but it'll allow new levels of human performance, hopefully new levels of integrative wellness, And I think a lot of the stress of our current working world can be, if you will, reallocated and mitigated. And the efficiency factor with these tools will hopefully allow us greater management. I mean, the next AI tool that I will engage in heavily will probably address 70% of all my email and be able to manage, you know, 40 to 50% of my current workflow each day. And if those tools really come, you know, to evolution as they, I think, will, it may allow us for a very different working and lifestyle approach in terms mm-hmm. of how we manage our day-to-day life and day-to-day work lives.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Like you mentioned ChatGPT, that's kind of changed my life as well in terms of like I create content for a living. And I would say it's more than half the amount of time it takes for me to draft a post for LinkedIn, a newsletter, a email. I can just keep going. You know, even if I have an idea, I'll put it into ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT to write me something around that particular idea. And it just sets, it gives me an amazing starting point to then add, edit, develop. You know, it's just even before podcasts, I had a podcast recently and I had an emergency in the business and I didn't have time to prep. And I went to ChatGPT and said, write me five questions around the top trends for diversity and inclusion in 2023, because that was what the theme of the podcast was. And I had this amazing list of questions around the top DEI trends for 2023. And we ended up being an incredible episode, but it looked like I did all that research, but I really didn't. It kind of gave it to me within seconds. Oh, yeah.
Tremendous for you. And you know, ChatGPT 4.0 will be launched here in the next 2 weeks. And the acceleration of all of this will require, you know, good governance and oversight. And these tools, you know, will not necessarily replace human talent and human innovation and creativity, but they'll be very strong augmentation tools, as you just described. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited by all of these emerging tools and capabilities. And it's another reason why, you know, the world of work and the world of the workforce, Chris, I think is going to be more exciting in the next 5 years, and how we navigate it mm-hmm. and how organizations make the right decisions and how we organize ourselves around all of what we've just discussed, I think is an incredibly new challenge, very exciting. Also, it has, you know, I have a saying, technology is like fire. It can heat your home, but it can also burn your house down. And so this ability to manage it, govern it with ethics, with guidance, and with good oversight will be really critically important as we migrate this path forward.
With all of these amazing opportunities, innovations, what would you say is the biggest piece of advice you'd give to the HR leaders listening right now to this podcast?
The biggest piece of advice I give to my senior HR leaders and clients these days is to be bold and fearless in terms of experimentation. And I think, and I am a natural pioneer in experimentation. And I've had some incredible failures, Chris, a few great successes. But I think the willingness to be open, the willingness to be curious, the willingness to experiment and to at least explore, whether it's, you know, our conversation just now around ChatGPT, or, you know, the future of extended reality, or the future of a 4-day work week, or a menuized ecosystem of employee services and offerings. I think the willingness to have that openness and curiosity and experimental and learning mindset is really key for the future, mm-hmm. given all that is coming and all of the if you will, complexity and disruption and innovation and, you know, that we're all experiencing today. So that would be my best piece of advice, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. How do you think the ChatGPT will impact HR as a function?
Well, potentially It will elevate HR to become much more strategic. And if we think about artificial intelligence as our co-pilot partner, all of the tactical and process-oriented workflow can migrate towards the machine. And so it should be able to elevate HR leaders to truly focus on those areas of human performance, on strategic people, engagement, management, talent, that are highest and best value for the organization. So that would be my hope. Mm-hmm. And I think that's coming. And this, you know, this opportunity really focusing upon the employee experience and people experience as the key priority. And how to ensure that people experience value proposal, that employee value proposition is being fully met at the highest levels and then refreshed continuously to keep people engaged, to keep them balanced, to keep them, you know, performing at the levels that are beneficial to the organization and to the individual. So the win-win-win for me, Chris, is how do we win for the individual? How do we win for the organization? And how do we win for society? And I look at that win-win-win equation in almost every, in every sense, whether it's, you know, climate change, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's DE&I. I mean, we've got to look at what's best for society, what's best for the organization, what's best for the individual.
Love that. And looking every time you're in a particular situation, project, strategy, et cetera, looking at it through those three lenses always is really interesting.
And, exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting, like you mentioned, about having sort of the AI buddy. If each of our employees had to have their own very own AI buddy at work, they can help them on their journey, can serve up information that they need when they need it, can predict actually perhaps what they need in advance and serve up information there, and nudges, provide nudges to leaders to help them. You can keep going.
And Chris, you've done 5 podcasts this week. Chris, you need to go to bed early tonight. Chris, you need to have a healthy meal. Chris, you need to spend time with your daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, if it's done in a nurturing and holistic way, I mean, it could be really positive.
I have an equivalent of that for my well-being, because talking about my anxiety earlier, the 3 things that really impact it is sleep, my diet and exercise. If I get those 3 right, everything is great. And I actually have a whole system set up in my house. So for example, my weight, I weigh myself every morning. That's actually programmed wirelessly into my app. So, and then it calculates. And then the food I have goes into the app. And then even when I work out, that gets programmed into the app, and it actually serves up. It's not AI, I would say, but it serves up notification. Hey, Chris, you've got X amount of sleep this week. You need to get more sleep. And that really helps me. Or hey, Chris, you haven't hit your macros this week. Right. You need to do this. And that has really helped me stay accountable by having that. It's not exactly AI. It's not as sophisticated, but it really, really helps keep me on track.
Now, Chris, you're a living example of integrative wellness. And it just becomes part of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, if you compare it to like flossing our teeth or brushing our teeth, it's just the next elevation of good wellness practice that becomes integrative and part of your day-to-day. And it actually becomes enjoyable.
It does.
You know, it's good for you. You feel better. Your engagement level is better. You're happier.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Listen, I knew we wasn't going to be able to keep to 30 minutes. I had so many more questions for you, but we've got to wrap up at some point. I know we have to do part 2, but before I let you go, where can people connect with you if they want to reach out to you personally, learn more about the work you're doing personally and also the business itself? Where's the best place for people to reach you? And then we'll say goodbye.
Well, Peter Miskovich, JLL, on the JLL website, www.jll.com. Or they're welcome to reach out to me via LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Chris, really such a pleasure being with you, spending time together. And, you know, I feel I've met a kindred spirit in the life work integration journey. So, so great to be with you today.
I'm still definitely not perfect by any means, but I think now I'm self-aware, which is kind of the first step. Always don't give myself a hard time. I think is also one of the key things. If I fall off, if I miss a few days, it doesn't matter. Just get back on. It's fine.
Yeah. My favorite words is compassion and self-compassion. Mm-hmm. And the ability to have that sense of self and empathy and compassion for oneself is actually probably one of our greatest challenges, but greatest gifts. So I try to do the same each and every day.
My coach pointed it out within the first few days of us having our session, say, Chris, you need to stop beating yourself up. You are giving yourself such a hard time, you know, just let it go.
We are often our own worst adversaries.
100%.
Amazing. Wonderful being with you, Chris. Thank you so much. And we look forward to future dialogue.
Me too. And for everyone listening, as always, those links in the description. So make sure you go and connect with Peter on LinkedIn. And also I'll leave a link here to the JLL website as well. But apart from that, enjoy the rest of your day. And I look forward to seeing you soon. All right.
Very good. Safe travels. Be well.